You find me in the Mile High city of Denver, Colorado today. Just woken up, descending the stairs down from the 13th floor of my hotel room, ostensibly here, in part actually for the AWP conference, the Association of Writers and Writing Programs, which should probably be AWWP, now that I think about it. But also there is a Japanese film festival going on here, put on by the Denver Film Society, which is focused on Mikio Naruse. Surprisingly, whose works are not well known here, but who made When a Woman Ascends the Stairs, which I've got the Criterion DVD of. Very nice. Hopefully see a couple more of his films here, rarely screened. Early impressions of the city out on the street are that it's kind of Seattle meets Los Angeles. And I'm out here now, heading toward the mall, because what else would you do on a writers and writing programs conference then go straight to the mall that is across the street from your hotel. Gotta go to the Gap because I've forgotten to buy boxers or to bring them. Now I have to buy them. I should append that Seattle-Los Angeles hybridization deal that I just said with an observation that there's a lot more public transit, at least in these few square blocks, than there is in either city. Than either Seattle or LA. There's also a lot of these sort of student-pedaled rickshaws or pedaled by student-looking types. So standard sort of stuff like light rail and buses and things. I should be able to see the city fairly easily with all this stuff. Wandering this mall looking for a Gap or something, and I see ads for Coyote Ugly. Not the movie, but the place based on the movie. They're actually still advertising it as that, like you've seen the movie. Now live the actual experience of Coyote Ugly. It's pretty great. They don't open till 10. I guess I could have predicted that. Well, over to the convention center. Take in some writing and some writing programs and whatever else. Coming up to the convention center, I see a beloved sculpture. Known simply as the Big Blue Bear, I believe. It's just a big blue bear leaning against the glass wall of the center. This is one of those places where the sun gets out to the extent you have to wear sunglasses, and yet it's still cold. What's up with that? We're in the AWP's main book fair exhibition hall right now, where there are probably a few hundred exhibitors. Journals, presses, etc., publishers, more than I'd ever thought there could be. I'm walking through them, trying kind of not to meet the gaze of any of them, because I think some put the hard sell on, some don't, I would imagine. Some have cookies. It's fascinating to see what they do to differentiate themselves from the others, to stand out. Some give out wine, some have cookies. Some have the AWP equivalent of booth girls, like you see at tech trade shows. Although they are both less and more than they are, than those are. It's fascinating, but I don't see it seems like a big undifferentiated mass right now. That's the book fair checked out. Now back to exploring the city itself. My hotel is right by the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, on the side of which is a very odd-looking mural of Teddy Roosevelt. And Jack Dempsey as well. Two figures often united in the culture. There's a sense in which I don't feel like an outsider at these writerly events, given that I do write. A lot of what I do involves the arranging of text into certain formations, but there's another sense in which I definitely do feel like an outsider. Seeing as I have nothing to do with literary journals or the scramble to get my short stories published in them or writing programs or MFAs or small presses, I am interested in maybe finding some books to cover on the marketplace of ideas, but there is definite distance there. I notice the city is quite easy to navigate, in part because the streets are such a uniform grid. There's a very strong grittiness to them. GRID, grittiness. It's not gritty, it's actually quite clean. But as well, because there's just enough tall buildings to use as landmarks, but not so many that they cover each other up. It also helps, I think, that my hotel is the tallest building itself in the neighborhood. Denver is a city known for its public art, and right now I'm in front of the Denver Art Museum looking at a piece by Claes Oldenburg called Big Sweep, 2006. And what's appropriate behavior around a giant broom and dustpan?
Yeah.
Okay, taking your picture with the broom, walking around the broom, admiring the broom from close up, chatting with the broom about cleaning products, blaming the broom for the degradation of contemporary morals. Not okay. Touching the broom, climbing on the broom, skating on the broom, riding on the broom, fondling the broom, caressing the broom. I'm now by another piece with a horse standing on top of a large red chair in front of the Denver Public Library. No plaque for attribution, no warnings either, so presumably fondling of the horse is okay if you can get up there. It's about 12 feet high, and I don't see any rungs, and I probably couldn't jump. Walking now through Larimer Square, Denver's most historic block, I'm told, en route to the Auraria campus, which I believe is shared by three institutions of higher education, to catch a lecture and presentation by the visual artist and animator, Kota Ezawa. Given that there's a large University of Colorado Denver building ahead, I can only assume I'm going in the right direction, even though they're having me walk over a freeway to get there. I'm still not quite sure what I'm making of this city. A lot of it's neat, some of it's kind of a snooze. Hard to separate one from the other or know what patterns they fall into. You know, as far as the snooze part of the city goes, the emblem of that for me will remain this sort of futuristic, modernistic glass box of a building, which contains a Quiznos. I just stared at that for a while. It seemed to mean something to me. Arriving on the Auraria campus, which is nearly deserted, strangely. There's like a scattering of students, but they are not out in force on this Friday afternoon. I feel like I'm also embedded in the center of the architectural aesthetic of Denver, if I'm going to call it that, which has been revealed to me as a lot of glass and a lot of brown brick. Not the usual steel and glass sort of thing, not glass and gray, not glass and black or white. It's all glass and sort of brown or reddish-brown brick. And it's a look I have not seen a lot of, to be honest, anywhere else. And now turning around, looking at the whole skyline that I'm getting kind of a close-up view of. Yeah, there's a lot of brown, a lot of brick, or brick-looking material, with a lot of glass set into it. I wonder if this was decided upon, or if it just kind of happened. There's also a whole lot of glass blocks used on this campus. They're just everywhere. These imposing walls made of nothing but glass blocks. It's a very 1980s kind of a construction or look, but one of the elements of that era's architectural design that I think, used sparingly, does hold up. Right now I'm standing in front of this big, 30-foot-high wall. Just glass blocks, a couple of doors, but pretty much just glass blocks. This is beginning to look like an Omega Man situation. The Auraria campus signs don't really point the way to the Starz Film Center, which is where I'm headed. It is, yes, named after the crappy cable movie channel, but I'll leave that aside for now. And I'm feeling like the last man on Earth because there's not really anybody around. There's cars, yes, you can hear them, but how can I be sure they're occupied? I think I found the right path, but I've just seen a car that is advertising, it's all just painted or silk screened or whatever, with an ad for Perky Jerky, the caffeinated beef jerky. Meditate on that one for a while, if you will. Having just emerged from the Kota Ezawa lecture and show, I can tell you that Ezawa himself looks and sounds like a German shaved-headed sort of character, which he kind of is. He's German-born and half-Japanese, though he kind of doesn't look it. What he does is he takes material like a Joseph Beuys lecture, Susan Sontag lecture, John Lennon, and Yoko Ono doing the bed-in, the Simpson verdict, and he draws over them, in a sense, with these very kind of crude, almost naive computer animations. He keeps the original soundtrack. He did the same thing with the Tommy Lee and Pamela Anderson sex tape. And I found it actually pretty interesting. You know, the guy was pretty shy, pretty retiring, but He said a lot about how he works intuitively, simply jumps in, simply says, you know, I think we should reenact Battleship Potemkin, the Odessa steps scene on the steps of the San Francisco Art School, and does it. And then he thinks, well, I should redraw a shot from each of the frame from each of the shots of that famous montage, and he just does it, and he ends up with sometimes complex projects on his hands because of that jumping in and seeing how it rolls type of workflow. It's a kind I admire, and one that I try to cultivate a little more myself these days. En route now to a panel on flarf and conceptual poetry. Asking the questions, are those the only ways forward for poetry, the only remaining poetry options left? Featuring Christian Book, Canadian poet much in the news lately for encoding a poem on the genome of an organism, I believe. I notice in the elevators of my hotel, the Hyatt Grand Regency, that they play, they have these monitors, these flat monitors set into them that play perfect examples of what I think about. When I think about ambient TV, I've done a lot of thinking about ambient television recently, and there are these still, long shots that move. They aren't completely still, they're just the camera's still, of plains and mountains and even some urban stuff. And it's very crisp, very sharp, very good example of what I'm talking about when I say the borderland between still and motion photography that so interests me. In the elevator now, watching some ambient television. I've actually hit the door close button to watch it a little bit longer. It's a very wide shot of a brown field. You can see just the tiniest trucks passing across the very edge of the horizon. I could watch this for a while, but now the elevator is going back down. Whoops. Having lunched at the aforementioned Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, if you can believe that, I now head back to the convention center, to the book fair, where, because it's the final afternoon of the AWP convention, it is deal-in days. I'm going to be cleaning up and making, hopefully striking some good bargains on small press oddities and curiosities. I'm back in this main expo hall at the book fair, taking about my fifth or sixth lap through this gauntlet of small presses and literary journals and poetry collections and poetry publishers and short story publishers and online journals, offline journals, magazines. There's some major players too here. I just made a large purchase from the Melville House table. But everything else, you know, I want to take a flyer on something here. I want to buy something interesting that I've never heard of before. But I have so little proximity to most of it that I'm not sure what to even look twice at or meet eye contact with the person who's selling. It's really pretty much unclear. But this is such a fascinating case study, and a lot of the subjects I've thought about in terms of what does it take to stand out, what does it take to get brain space with an audience, what does it take to get proximity to a potential audience so that they're willing to make the leap. Like, I'm looking to make the leap and buy something on spec, but I don't even know where to begin. I don't even know how to get pointed toward anything. Maybe there's someone to ask. And you know what's more? A lot of this stuff is free, and I'm still not sure what to take. Free stuff being one of the techniques often used, well, not often, but sometimes used to lure in passers-by. Also, the booth girls I mentioned before. The particular brand of booth girls they have here. Cookies, candy, free issues of things, books that are actually free. Those are rarer. And yet a lot of stuff doesn't still manage to stand out very clearly. It's kind of impressive that no other solution has really been found here. One of the things I picked up is a fortune cookie. You can kind of hear the sound of it, of the wrapper there. Another one of the enticements. And since I mentioned the booth girls before, I should clarify, because the Denver Auto Show is going on in the same building, these are not the booth girls that you'd find there. These are infinitely superior. They are more of the bespectacled, patterned, tided types, not the 7-inch lucite heel types. And I can tell you in a heartbeat which I prefer. Boy howdy. My fortune reads, "The difference is spreading," attributed to Gertrude Stein. I am still striking out as far as what to buy. I'm put in a very awkward position of judging books by their covers, which wasn't I always told not to do that? Weren't we all? But with so much competition here and so many offerings, it's kind of all you can do. It leads me to another awkward conclusion, which is that the most valuable attribute here is probably fame. It's probably name recognition. At least it gives people some proximity to you, so, you know, if you're looking to drop $7 that you have remaining on, say, a chapbook of poetry, you have some way in, you have some way to decide that's more credible than the cover, which one that you'd like to buy, but, yeah, I'm lacking that right now. I guess I could focus exclusively on the books as art objects, but that just leaves me with one more thing to keep on the shelf, even if free books have that cost to them. I've now returned to the Denver airport and am approaching my gate, riding one of these moving sidewalk deals, which normally I would be walking on and make it just a speed increaser of my walk, but I'm recording and I don't want to be huffing and puffing. You might well ask, what did I come out with in the AWP book fair? I searched, and finding no direction to go in as far as what small press oddities to buy, I went by sort of chronology, because the Tri-Quarterly Review, that sort of thick literary magazine, was selling back issues for $5 each, and I picked one up from 1972 with Borges on the cover. It's all dedicated to Borges. And I suppose, you know, I was talking about big names. Borges might have just been the name that got me to lay down my cash, my $5 of cash money. I notice in the airport here there's a large, sort of a very thick ambient aura of complaint, and you always feel that with air travel, or at least I do. I don't actually complain. I'm not into it. You know, I believe in action and acceptance, you know, those two. Complaint is sort of the useless third point of that triangle. That sounds more Buddhist than I mean it to. That sounds more tricycle than tri-quarterly, but so be it. If I'm not complaining, why should you? Even if it's air travel.